A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm David Cartledge.
And I'm Lars Iversen.
This question straight away, and this is probably the question that everybody is asking about this particular person. Josh has asked us on Instagram, can you tell us more about Ruben Amorim amid links between him and the Liverpool job that is clearly up in the air now in terms of vacancies, David?
Yeah, he's another one of these very exciting coaches that are around right now. There seem to be quite a few. So it's a good job. There's probably a lot of jobs coming up this summer. But yeah, Ruben Amorim, he rose to prominence at Braga in the League Cup in his first season. After that, made the hop to Sporting Club de Portugal. He's gone there, won the league title, their first in 19 years. And he's built upon that success every year. And it's not just that success as well. I think from a tactical point of view, he's very, very interesting as well. I think, you know, the Liverpool link makes a lot of sense.
Would he take it though?
I think he would. He might feel his work in Sporting is done in terms of the ceiling there. Whereas in your comparison with Xabi Alonso, I think he can probably say, well, there's a bit more to do here. I can do. Yeah, I'm not too sure what Amorim could all continually do with Sporting, but loves his 3-4-3. Likes his wingers to cut inside, play inverted as well. One midfielder in the double pivot to break up play, another one to organise as well. Counter pressing, very similar to Klopp, I think, as well. So that's what I was meaning by the link there. Yeah, just Sporting have been really interesting to watch under him. I think he's clearly ready for the next step up right now. I think he can bring his football, his style to a bigger club. I think he's ready for that leap.
There'll be a lot expected of him, and particularly considering who he would be following. And you never know what this season still holds for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. That feels like a burden. Because, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, to a certain extent. He would need to literally replicate the success of Jurgen Klopp almost immediately, I would have thought.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, look, Arsenal, when they brought Mikel Arteta in after Unai Emery, I think there were maybe two or three junctures that they could have got rid of Arteta, like other clubs would have in that situation. They decided to stick with him. the success is now kind of, you know, coming for them in a sense that, you know, you look at Arsenal, very, very serious club, very, very serious team now. So, and they did that by sticking by him. I think if Amorim did come, obviously there'd be expectation there, because if whoever comes in Liverpool is still going to have a very, very good squad right now. We're not talking about a squad that has been ripped up and destroyed or anything like that, or needs a major overhaul. There needs to be a continuation of the success, but also I think progression of their style. You're always wanting progression. And also that manager who comes in to implement his own style there as well. So there will be that pressure. It's Liverpool. It doesn't come much bigger, quite frankly. And like you said, you're following Klopp as well, which just adds a further notch on this. But I think he'd be a very, very good appointment for Liverpool or even Man United if they decide to move on from Erik ten Hag.
Lush.
So the thing about Amorim, which I feel like is the one fun fact everyone should know, is the nature of his move to Sporting, because he'd only actually been in charge of Braga for 13 games. Like, Braga was his first proper job. He'd been in charge of Braga's second team, was put in charge of the first team. He'd only coached him for 13 games. When Sporting decided to pay, I think they paid 10 million euros to get him, which is a wild amount of money for Sporting to pay for a very young manager who's been a manager for 13 games. I mean, because Portuguese clubs, they sell for a lot of money, but they don't typically spend huge transfer fees because their whole business model is about buying low and selling high. So for Sporting to sort of shell out 10 million for a coach who's been in charge for 13 games, it's wild. So they must have been extremely confident very early on that this guy, there's going to be something about him. Like, I've not met Ruben Amorim, I don't know. But like, for them to be that confident that this is the guy, this guy's a stud, he's going to be a superstar manager, he must have some personal qualities, some very significant personal qualities. And of course, he has won the title with the Sporting, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do. I mean, typically Benfica and Porto tend to be a little bit stronger than them. So that's very impressive. The thing that, again, I'm not going to claim intense detailed knowledge of him and his work. I don't watch the Portuguese league nearly as much as for instance, the patron saint of OTC, Andy Brassel, does. But it occurs to me that he is a 3-4-3 guy, Amorim. Maybe coaches are smart guys who know they can play different ways, but he's always played 3-4-3 with Sporting. So it's interesting to think how that would fit with Liverpool's current squad. Maybe this is not the pod to do a deep dive on that but it's something to be aware of, I think, as you think about this link.
Has he got a big personality? Because he's going to need it, isn't it? If you look at Jurgen Klopp, you're talking about a big, big personality there that the fans can relate to. Has he got that?
Klopp's unique. I don't think he's got anywhere near as big a personality as Klopp. I think he's quite understated, quite calm presence, to be honest with you. Again, doesn't crave the limelight or anything like that. I'm not saying Klopp does, but I don't think Amorim's anywhere near the bigger personality as Klopp is.
And of course, watch this space, as in OTC, to find out what happens. We'll bring you every instalment in this saga, I can assure you. Oh, and this one gives me an opportunity to polish off my COD Norwegian. Lars, Terje, Froger.
Yeah.
Vad är dina tankar om Ståle Solbakken? Finns det andra exemplar på landslag med slike spelare som vi har idag som aldrig är i närheten av att kvalificera sig? Was that good? And do you mind translating it?
Do you know what it reminded me of? Roy Hodgson.
Well, at least you didn't say the cook in
No. But Roy Hodgson speaks a really endearing sort of mix, because he's obviously worked in Sweden for a long time, and you've been to Sweden. I mean, you definitely have like a Swedish thing going on. But Hodgson has also worked in Danish, in Denmark, and in Norway. And when he speaks like an omni-Scandinavian. That's like a little bit of everything. You're of course here reading Norwegian in a very heavy sort of Swedish accent. So that's fine.
No, but
that's...
that was a Norwegian accent actually. If it was Swedish, I'd have said it like this: "Var är dina tankar om Ståle Solbakken?"
I thought you went slightly Danish there for a second, but anyway, it's very impressive, Dawson. It's very impressive.
Thank you.
What he said is, what are your thoughts on Ståle Solbakken? are there any other examples of national teams with players like we have today who have never come close to qualifying? Now, the Stolle-Solbakken thing, I think, is a bit tricky because I still maintain, I think it's probably the most, if we're assuming we're just going to stick with Norwegian guys and not appoint a foreign manager, I can't think of anyone who like has the CV and the track record that suggests he's more qualified than him. I still think he's probably the most suitable guy for the job. I think if he was to leave today, who would they appoint? Like, they'd most likely get Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I would not be super excited about that. I may be wrong, but I don't think that would be an upgrade. But the thing that's becoming hard to deny is that it hasn't really worked quite as well as we were hoping so far. I think he's an impressive guy, Solbakken, and I think, again, he seems to be, in theory, the right man for the job, but you can't escape the results, which have not been what we were hoping. Would we hire a foreign coach instead? I mean, you may think when I say I've not included Kjetil Knudsen in the conversation now, but I haven't because I don't think he's going to take a national team job. That doesn't seem to make sense for him right now. Would we go foreign? I think for the Norwegian FA to hire a foreign coach kind of would be tricky because we don't pay that well. Like, the kind of contracts that a well-renowned qualified coach from a bigger footballing nation would expect is a contract I think the Norwegian FA would be very uncomfortable handing out. So at the most, we're looking at other Scandinavian candidates. I definitely think if there was an outstanding Norwegian candidate out there who was clearly wanted the job and was clearly well suited for the job, I think Solbakken would be in real trouble. But I'm not sure there is right now. And the results haven't been as expected, but I still kind of like him as a coach still. We have great players, but the team also has had some pretty significant Achilles heels. Now, it's great to see Örjan Nyland play regularly in Spain and doing really well. I think he deserves that after a few years in the footballing wilderness. But goalkeeping has been an issue for us. Defense has been an issue for us. Getting the right balance in midfield has been the issue for us. I still sort of kind of have faith in Solbakken, but I will acknowledge that it's getting harder and harder to back that up with logic. And I repeat, if there was a standout candidate waiting in the wings, he would be in trouble. But I personally am not convinced Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is such a standout candidate, and I don't see what the other options would be right now.
And just to clarify, for those who haven't been following the fortunes of the Norwegian national team, even though you've got something of a golden generation at the moment, not least with Erling Haaland, obviously, as a centre forward. You're not making the international tournaments.
We're not. The problem with this, I mean, we were in a group with Spain, Scotland, Georgia, and Cyprus, and our big problem there was that Scotland were suddenly a lot better than anyone expected. So Scotland getting results against Spain kind of messed things up for us. And then we were in the lead, but then kind of everything went wrong when we played Scotland at home in the spring, and that's kind of doomed our campaign a little bit. I did a chapter in the Haaland book about his sort of career with Norway so far, and when you go through the qualifying campaigns in which we've had Erling Haaland and the way in which we haven't qualified, there have been some really like near misses in terms of games where we really should have done better and really should have gotten there. There have been various extenuating circumstances in terms of injuries, COVID, various stuff, but it's very, very frustrating. But consistently throughout, we've had a pretty lopsided squad. You know, I can't really kick Örjan Nyland anymore because he's playing regularly in La Liga and doing a good job there. But he was playing for Norway when he was without a club. Like, we had a goalkeeper who was unemployed. Like, we had, for crucial qualifying games, in the lineup would be like Erling Haaland, Martin Ødegaard, and in goal, unemployed man. Like, that's kind of weird to see at this level. So it's clearly the curse of being a small country is that even if you do manage to get a couple of superstars, you need... Again, I think our model should be Wales. You know, the way they managed to build a team around Ramsey and Bale of just solid triers who work hard and do a good job and hang together as a unit and kind of feed, allow these exceptional players to do their stuff. I mean, that's what we should be hoping to do. And as much as I like Solbakken, obviously it hasn't happened yet, but I still have a little bit of faith in him.
Just one for me, just on that subject of superstars. What's the media like in Norway towards the superstars in terms of putting pressure on them to deliver for Norway and what have you? Is there a considerable amount of pressure? Are they being asked to, you know, to step up more and to take Norway to that next level now?
No, I think I think the media landscape in Norway is a lot less crazy than in other countries. With exceptions, obviously, but I think there are quite a lot of sane and rational people employed in the Norwegian media who rarely sort of fly off the handle completely. And I think there is an understanding.
Apart from you.
Well, of course, of course. There is a frustration with Solbakken, and there's a frustration that we have these two incredible players in particular, and we haven't been able to make the most of it yet. But there is a bit... Okay, so this seems like... It's a bit of a luxury problem to have. It's amazing that we've had these two players at the same time. It's obviously fun. But I want this... Sometimes I get the feeling that they're not super compatible, because, again... Haaland wants the ball played in behind early. Like, he wants quite direct service. He wants to be able to run into space. He wants the ball played into him as early as possible. But he kind of almost has the same problem for Norway as he has at City sometimes, because Martin Ødegaard loves playing these little passes, as we see at Arsenal. Little one-twos, clever little balls here and there. Whereas Haaland just stop messing about and play it into space early, you know, I think is what he wants, which is exactly the thing that he wants from Man City. So I think we have that. But again, patience is certainly running out for Solbakken. You can tell I'm slightly defensive when I'm talking about him, because I do know a lot of people are very critical at this juncture.
Well, as Jens Stoltenberg would say, tack så mycket.
That came out of nowhere.
Well, of course it does. NATO generally does. Out of nowhere.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
James on Twitter asks, despite their well-publicized struggles in recent years, Valencia seem to be having much of a better season, David. What has caused this upturn in form, and will they get back to where they once were in the near future?
Funnily enough, that question's interesting, because I actually think it's almost an acceptance on the part of Valencia. We'll get on to Baraja in a minute. I think there's been an acceptance there. When will Valencia, this sleeping giant, wake up? When will they return to the heights of previous years? I think they've accepted that right now they can't. They're simply not capable, because the way the club is run and just what they are left with in terms of squad.
Searching with relegation, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So I think they've acknowledged, for one, what they are now. I think in the past they had they couldn't understand that, and I think there was too much pressure put on the managers and what have you. So they've got over that, and on Baraja himself and what he's doing. And you've got to remember, he's working here, right, with the third youngest squad in Europe out of the top five leagues. It's the youngest in Spain by far as well. So he's got a team of kids. A lot of them come from the academy. A lot of them cast offs from elsewhere.
And that's because of their financial situation.
Yeah, it's exactly because of that financial situation. And look, I mean, there was a big situation with Gabriel Paulista, ex-Arsenal as well. He was one of the experienced heads. And Baraja insisted on playing him all the time. And he nearly ran into trouble with Pete Lim and with the club then. Paulista eventually went, he went to Atletico Madrid. So that was, these things he still has to navigate. There's still a lot of problems at the top of the club. That's just an example of one of them. But in terms of Baraja and the job that he's done, what he has done to make them better, first and foremost, they've been extremely solid defensively. They give up little on a defensive side. It can be a little bit dull to watch sometimes and boring, but look, the resources that they have, the age of the squad that they have, he has built from the back and worked from the back and said, look, if we're going to perform and get to a higher level, then we need to create some foundations first. And it's very back to basic stuff in a way, but it was a smart decision to do that. They've built from the back really well. And from an attacking point of view as well, they've also gradually improved. And it's an interesting one because Baraja didn't really have any status as a coach before he came to Valencia. As a player, significant, absolute Valencia legend, part of one of the greatest Valencia teams ever under Rafa Benitez. And a key part of it as well. But his coaching career has been pretty mediocre to average. Well, he got his dream job. It was always where he wanted to coach Valencia. And he's done a very, very good job in time. I mean, teething issues, don't get me wrong. There's been a few problems, but they're looking better now than they have in some time. If they beat Granada this weekend, they'll actually, I think, level points what Marcelino had at this same stage in his best season with Valencia. So I think that's testament to what he's doing right now on very, very slim resources.
Well, David, I want to ask David, all this is well and good. At least they're not getting relegated and they're kind of solidly mid-table. But more broadly speaking, do you think there's any prospect of Valencia so kind of returning to any kind of prominence while they're still owned by Peter Lim?
No. Not at all.
Good. Excellent. We can move on.
No, I'll try and expand. This era has been an absolute disaster. Yes, there have been a few highs, but they've been very fleeting. And whatever highs they had, they were soon destroyed by Lim and how he's operated within the club and the various people that he's had to look over football operations. So until he is gone, Valencia will never kick on and get anywhere near to their incredible heyday.
Well, here's a question for both of you to mull over. It's an expansive question, actually. Seems very simple, straightforward. There's a lot to talk about here. This is from Marcus on Instagram. Which coaches have other coaches look to for tactical developments? You could argue that we're talking about the coach's coach, if you like. Do you want to go with that first, Lars?
Sure. There's a few names you can throw up. I'm very tempted to bring up Arrigo Sacchi first, just because he's kind of the sort of grandfather of like zonal marking and the sort of high press and the sort of the way players move in relation to others on the field. I mean, I remember during COVID, during lockdown, like I nearly lost my mind, like a lot of people, just for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons was when football stopped. Like, I'm so used to watching an unholy number of football games every week that when I sort of went for a prolonged period of time without even the noise of football in the background, it affected me mentally in a way I wasn't really prepared for. And to just trying to stay sane, what I did was watch a lot of old games. Like, there was this website, I think a few of us became familiar with it, that had full recordings, not highlights, but 90-minute recordings of various games from history. And I started putting that on just to sort of get some sense of normality and sort of football happening. And it was great because it was really educational, because I'm actually not as strong on football history as I should do, so I had an occasion to sort of watch a lot of it's a very roundabout way of saying watching these games from a long time ago, that's really interesting because we forget how much football has changed. And one of the things you really notice is how much time players just spend standing around. Like, I mean, if someone else had the ball, players would not necessarily move a lot. And this idea now that's completely par for the course is that you're constantly repositioning yourself to keep the shape according to where the ball is on the field and what's going on. I think Sacchi was someone who did a lot to introduce that in terms of, like, you don't track your man, you track a zone, and people move in relation to each other. And I think so much of modern football comes out of his ideas of how to structure a team. And I like the fact that he's also then started out being a shoe salesman, which is tremendous, because it's the sort of eternal counter argument to the whole idea that you get sometimes about you. No one can have opinions on football unless they've played at the highest level, which is like bad news for you, because one of the most influential coaches in the history of the game was a shoe salesman. And as he once said, I wasn't aware that to be a jockey you first have to have been a horse. This is one of the quotes for the ages in that regard.
Yes, thank you for all of that. I was thinking shoes, Italian, it all fits, doesn't it, so to speak. Boom, boom. Yeah, once upon a time. Arrigo Sacchi, where would you go?
Yeah, I'd absolutely concur with that. Sacchi was on my list. So I had, going back, I think you've got Rinus Michels, Arrigo Sacchi, Johan Cruyff, Pep Guardiola, Marcelo Bielsa, and Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
I'd say they're all influencers, innovation, whether it be tactical, whether it be off the pitch as well. I think they have all, really, really shaped the game that we have right now in front of our very eyes, what we watch every single day, every single weekend, down to the smaller details, even larger details as well. I think if you look at all those names and what they have done, it's quite remarkable. And there's a few in there that maybe, didn't win. Let's say Bielsa and Wenger didn't win a lot, as I'd say, compared to the others. But that doesn't, I think, take away their influence on the game and what they have done. I think there's a lot of coaches right now who have, if you look at all those names, there's a lot of coaches right now who have got into the game purely on the based upon those coaches and what they saw with them. Now, obviously, quite a few of them are, intrinsically linked. You've got the Michels, Cruyff, Guardiola sort of link. And then if you look at Guardiola as well and who he speaks about as well in terms of Bielsa, I always remember when Bielsa was at Athletic Bilbao, and Athletic Bilbao were really in an incredible moment under Bielsa. Guardiola said, right now, Bielsa is the best coach in the world. And it's a shame that Bielsa's silverware hasn't really kind of backed up, the level of influence what he's had on the game. But he'll always remain, I think, for me, I'm 36, so I didn't see some of those coaches, obviously, and what have you like that. I'd always say for me, personally, who I've seen, it's been Guardiola and Bielsa, who I've watched and been fascinated by and seen their ideas implemented by other coaches in a successful manner.
You've got to be brave as a coach, though, to try and rewrite the rule book on coaching, yeah. Don't you? To reinvent the wheel, because the jeopardy is that you could fail spectacularly, but also, even if you succeed, how long will your style of reinvention succeed before it is eventually overturned, Lars?
Yeah, no, that's always the way. And I guess you mentioned Wenger. I mean, he's a great example of an innovator and a pioneer who was eventually overtaken by the way the sport was developed and the things that he did at Arsenal that was very innovative in the beginning. After a while, became something everyone did. And then he maybe didn't have anything new to add to the party to take Arsenal back to the level where they, where he would have taken them to. An interesting sort of twist on this question is whether a coach can be a negative influence. And I want to word myself very carefully just to avoid people getting very angry with me. I wonder if in a weird way, if Sir Alex Ferguson, as much as he was a genius in his own right, I think a lot of coaches might have kind of taken things from and taken the wrong things from Sir Alex. It's an interesting thing about how few of the great, great players who played under Sir Alex Ferguson who have gone on to become good or even decent coaches. It's actually not a very long list, and there's quite a few of them have tried and done very badly. Yeah. And it occurs to me that you can have a coach who, because of his unbelievable success, becomes a figure that people want to emulate, but then they don't understand that certain personalities can't be emulated. Like, I think if you're a coach who decides to try to do things the way Sir Alex would do, you will have a very bad time, because guess what? You're not Sir Alex Ferguson. I think in terms of to flip that on its head, as much as he was an one of the greatest coaches of all time, I think his influence on other coaches may not have been entirely positive in some cases.
No, I think it's absolutely true. And it's going to be interesting to see the next generation as well, because you're now going to get coaches who have played under, Ancelotti, under Guardiola, who are going to start and coming through and going through a merge. And then you've got guys like Xavi Alonso, who has played under every great coach there is in the modern day. And now he's coming through as well, which is an interesting one.
I think the Pep point is very well observed by David, because we're going to have so many coaches who are inspired by Pep Guardiola, and understandably so, and rightly so. But they need to have the intelligence to see to what extent they have the players who can execute that philosophy, and to what extent, you know, the circumstances allows for it. So it all comes down to not just who you're influenced by, but whether you as a coach have the intelligence to realize that there are some contexts where certain things will work, and there are some contexts where, whether you think something is a good idea or not, it's not the right time to implement it.
And then, of course, when we haven't even explored the possibility that there might be a different perspective if you're a national team coach to being a club coach. Maybe that'll come as a question for Ask OTC on another occasion. So keep that in your back locker, gentlemen. For now, thank you both very much. And thank you for listening to Ask OTC. If you'd like to ask a question that you can throw at us, then do feel free to contact us at any time at Radio Dotton, at David Jacker, and at Lars Severson, and at OTC Pod. And you can email us otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.